The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Women of Washington is a series of weekly radio interviews with Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation of Washington leaders. Aileen and Gigi interview the most accomplished women in Washington who share their life lessons and secrets to success.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Our guest today is the Honorable Laverne Council. Laverne joined the Department of Veterans Affairs in July 2015 as the Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology. In this role, Ms. Council oversees the day-to-day activities of VA's $4-plus billion budget and over 8,000 IT employees to ensure that VA has IT tools and services needed to support our brave nation's veterans.
Thanks for having me. This is really a pleasure to be here. I'm enjoying being in the radio station. This is exciting.
Well, Laverne, we will talk about all kinds of things related to your career. But before we even get into that, can you share with us a little bit about where you're from, where you grew up? Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of our guests, we find, were really influenced or inspired by a person or a couple of people or events in their lives. So if you have something like that, we'd love to hear what inspired Laverne.
Well, it's an interesting story. I'm a Hoosier. I was born and raised in Northwest Indiana. As a Midwesterner, you know, we sort of have a different bent on ourselves. We feel like we keep the country balanced. If it wasn't for the Midwest, you know, it'd fall over to the left or fall over to the right. And so we keep it in the middle. But I was also raised by a Southern mom. And I have to say, she influenced me more than anyone. My mother and I was well behind my sisters and brothers. So I'm the youngest of four. And there's 16 and 15 and 9 years difference between myself and them. But she never, ever talked to me about impossibility. Everything was possible. Everything that I thought, everything I dreamed, everything that I wanted to do was okay. She didn't pigeonhole me. She didn't say, girls, don't do that. You can't have a race car set. And in the times, you know, not dating myself, but at that time, that was highly unusual because the norm was, you know, you got the one doll and you play with the doll and you thought about your trousseau, right? It was just the opposite, you know. So if I wanted a telescope, that's what she would make it her business to make sure I had. And my mom, you know, with the fact that she did not get a whole lot of education, she was a very hard worker, but she was very clear with me about what I could do. And I often tell people I didn't understand that there would be any barriers to anything I wanted to do until I left home because I never got that in the home. And I often talk to women about their need to make sure that they empower their daughters and they make sure that they don't give their burden and their points of view and put those on their daughters. And I know my mom didn't have the easiest of life, and things didn't necessarily come easy for her, but I'm happy to say she didn't burden me with the things that affected her. Her point of view was, you can do anything, you can accomplish anything. I may not be able to have the answer for you, but I know you can do it. And that has always been a big motivator, and it really created a level of okayness, even with the quirky times that we all go through, but also a real gap when you know, at the age of 50, my mom left me because very few people in your life really got your back like that.
Laverne, you mentioned you didn't encounter the first barrier until you left the home. Do you remember encountering that first barrier? What was that?
Yes, I can. It was interesting. The guidance counselor in the high school I went to, I was a very good student, and he told me, well, it won't be that easy for you when you go to college, so don't think it's going to be that easy. And of course, I've always liked learning and was excited about going to college. And I remember my undergraduate was at Western Illinois University, and I get to university, and you know, as an African American female, I sort of stood out. I was taking a lot of math and engineering courses. Those have always been things I've enjoyed. And I remember a situation where the testing was based on a curve. And, you know, in a curve kind of situation, when you take the test, well, the curve is set based on the highest score on the curve. Well, I got the highest score on that curve. And I did it two or three times. And the third time, the professor said I cheated. And I was like, cheated on who? Because there was nobody else to really cheat from. But he just could not believe that I could do that. And it was so offensive to me, and it hurt me so deeply, because he said it in front of the other team members, and he said in front of the other classmates, and it felt hurtful. It felt malicious. It didn't feel inclusive. It didn't feel like he wanted to believe it. And so I remember feeling very dejected, and in fact, he marked my page down, because it was throwing the curve off. Well, that meant everybody else wasn't doing so well, but he's grading on the curve, not me. And I remember going back and walking to my dorm and really just almost wanting to cry. And I've never been a big crier, but when you hurt me, you know, in my whole value system, it felt like my core had been shaken to have somebody do that to me in front of everyone. I just really thought about, you know, how are you going to show up, you know, and what would mom say, you know? And so we had another test coming up. It was in managerial economics. I remember it like yesterday. And I decided to sit right in front of him and take the test. And that time I got a perfect score. But I sat right in front of him and took that test. And I looked him right in the eye and I handed it to him. And for me, that was my willingness to, one, take on the bully, but also my willingness to say, you know, you're not going to break me, you know. But it those kinds of things in life, they happen. I wish I could say that's the only time it did. It wasn't. But my reaction to it, I know, was based on my belief system, the engagement that had been around me in my life, and certainly having support to know who I really was. And I think as a young woman, that's really important.
Today in the studio, we're talking with the Honorable Laverne Council, CIO for Veterans Affairs. Coming up, we'll hear how Laverne has shattered the glass ceiling. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking to the Honorable Laverne Council, CIO, Veterans Affairs.
So Laverne, I was just reading an article recently in The Guardian that women today hold only 5% of the CEO positions in the Fortune 500. And in the same article, they were mentioning that only 1.6 are of the CEOs are minorities. So you have just, by being an executive at your level, both in public and private sector, you have just shattered the glass ceiling. So first I want to ask, did you ever picture yourself in these executive roles when you started out in your career?
It's interesting because I was the first college graduate in my family. And so, you know, when you're a first like that, you're sort of looking and learning, you know, you're sort of seeing what's the possibilities. I think when I decided that I wanted to be in the business world versus the medical world, because I was sort of in between, I knew that I wanted C in front of my name. And I thought that the C would be COO, frankly, because I love manufacturing and procurement and operations. I really enjoy that aspect. But I also knew, you know, from when I was young, that I had an ability to organize and a willingness to make decisions, what some people might call bossy. And I always say, you know, that that whole conversation about calling girls bossy, well, when I came up, you know, that was the number one term. But the fact was, I was always very good at organizing a lot of complexity and thinking about the best path. And I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed solving difficult problems. And so I didn't know what it would look like, Gigi, to be honest with you. I didn't know where the road would lead. But I did feel like if I could get the opportunity, I would step through the door.
And I know that throughout your career, you've supported organizations to help working mothers and mentoring organizations to improve and increase the diversity statistics in the workplace. What do you think about the progress since you started out?
You know, it's sad to me that we haven't made more progress, frankly. It should not be an anomaly that a woman or a woman of any race or that an African American or any minority group person should be an oddity in these roles, but it is that way. And I think it requires that there's somebody who looks at you and sees the potential, regardless of what they see as their gender or race, but what they see as you as a person. It was interesting. My first corporate job was as a programmer analyst for State Farm Insurance. And I often share this story because the gentleman that ended up really, I think, lighting that fire that I could do something more was a gentleman. And I mentioned his name, and I don't think he's around anymore, but his name was Al Blair. And I always tell people I have my Al Blair moment. And Al looked at me, and I was, you know, just burning it up, getting things done. Back in those days, they write a spec, and they put how many hours it would take. And, you know, and you'd get it in that many hours. We always got it in soon, you know. And then he always would give me the next challenge. And it was interesting because, you know, I was a unique individual amongst the group of folks. But Al was also, I think, a little bit of a unique individual. And he paid attention to the fact that, you know, I'm here. I don't have family here. I'm trying to make it, you know. And he basically said something and did something that I found to be life affirming. He looked at me one day and he says, you know, you're bigger than this. He says, you're bigger than this and you can do more than this. And I said, wow, this is a pretty cool job, you know? And he says, no, He says, you are. And he says, I've had a conversation with people over at corporate, and I ended up, at the age of 24, leading all our hiring for our IT resources because he said, you know, you get it. You know what we're looking for. You know what good looks like. And I ended up doing that because of this man. And he says, you don't want to grow up to be me. He says, you want to grow up to be the boss of me. And it was fascinating that somebody who couldn't have been more different, probably couldn't have been raised more different, but he took the opportunity to see something and say something, you know? And so often, that's what we have to do. And so I look at myself, and I've always paid it, you know, pay it forward, if I see something in someone, I say something.
Today in the studio, we're talking with the Honorable Laverne Council, CIO, Veterans Affairs. Laverne, you have a huge job at VA, but you have another job. You're the chairman of the National Board of Trustees for the March of Dimes. Yeah. Can you tell us about the work you do with the March of Dimes?
Well, I actually, because I'm a political appointee by the president, I had to relinquish that role. But for 10 years, I was on the national board, and for four of those years, I was chair. I was the second woman chair in March of Dimes history, which is interesting because we're about babies, right? And you would think there would be a ton of women chairs. But the fact is we pull from leaders in corporate America and really focus on eliminating the issues around prematurity. I, as a mom, by the way, of a premature son, my son is now 18 years old, but Troy was born at 26 weeks. And I was sitting on the board of the March of Dimes, actually in Cleveland, when I had Troy very unceremoniously, very unprepared, not at risk, and found myself in distress. And of all people, this wasn't supposed to happen to me. The reality is, it happens to a lot of women just like it happened to me. And I was even more committed to the fact that I wanted to eliminate in my lifetime that this could happen, that there couldn't be a way to purview and help. And I'm happy to say that over the last 6 years, prematurity in this country has gone down in a great rate, and we are trying to get the infant mortality up in this country. Most people don't understand how low we're rating as a country when it comes to infant mortality. But I'm proud to say that through the work of the March of Dimes, we've created 5 transdisciplinary centers during my tenure as chair. These transdisciplinary centers are unique. They're one of a kind, and their focus is to actually cure the areas of prematurity by creating new science. And what was so neat about this, our first one was at Stanford University. They include, these premature institutes include neonatologists, environmentalists, sociologists, and I'm trying to think, all the different sciences. And what these folks have decided to do, these very learned scholars have decided to do, is forget their languages and come together and create a new language to solve this problem. And so we have that center in Stanford. We have a consortium out of University of Chicago, the University of Washington, UPenn, and then the Ohio Consortium, which I'm most proud of because one of the nurses that took care of my son when we lived in Cleveland, and when I found out and they showed the picture, she's one of the lead nurses in Ohio that are leading that institute. So it all came full circle. And, you know, there's nothing better than giving back and making a decision to change something for someone else.
Wow. Lauren, you, as you mentioned, you are a mom and you have achieved this incredible success. I've heard you say being a working mom is a bold choice. So can you help shed some light on what that means?
Oh, yeah, this is the real deal. This is commando time. I mean, you know, women walk around with a lot of guilt anyway, in general. But then when you're a mom, you're dealing with guilt plus, right? And I've always been fascinated with my husband of 26 years and how he can come across as very guilt-free. He can go, he plays golf, he doesn't worry about the amount of time he's playing golf, he watches football, he doesn't worry about the amount of time he's watching football. Me, those things are like, well, I could be doing A, B, and C. Why am I doing that? So I think it comes with the gender basic. But the fact is, because of that, you know, we want that engagement. You know, we actually, I find myself, I'll speak for myself, I need that engagement with my son. I sort of like that adulation. I want somebody to be happy to see me. So therefore, I got to make sure that I invest properly so that I can get the kind of response that I want. And so, but that's the same thing at work, right? I got to invest responsibly so I can get the response that I want. And frankly, that's how it is in all avenues. And so as a working mom, you're making a number of decisions. If you decide to be a single mother, you certainly have made a very hard decision because now you're taking it all on yourself. So you're going to want that support at the job. You're going to want that support at home. You got to make all the deposits. But the same thing if you're a married mom. Because I often say I got to go take care of the boys. You know, my husband's self-sufficient to a point. And so it requires me to decide, you know, what kind of wife I want to be, what kind of girlfriend I want to be, what kind of mom I want to be, what kind of executive I want to be, you know, what kind of athlete I want to be, because I got to take care of myself. And that's really important, by the way. If you want to be a good commando mom, you got to take care of yourself, because if your health goes, you're no good to anyone. So, you know, when I look at those 5 things, it's a full slate. And to do it and still be bright-eyed, you got to be on your game.
So speaking of the seeds of guilt, both Gigi and I have 4 kids, and we have discussed many times between us and with our guests How surprised and how often this happens when you're standing there next to one of your male peers and they get asked a serious question about the career and they turn around to you and they ask, how do you do it? You have four kids, but the guy next to you might have four kids and they never get asked that question. Have you had that same experience?
Oh, all the time. You know, most of my career has been managing and leading teams outside the United States. And so I've traveled a lot and lived internationally and invariably, someone will say, they'll ask me a couple of things. They won't ask me about my kids. First, they'll say, what does your husband think about this? And I'm looking at the male executives. I'm like, nobody asked what his wife thinks about this. I was like, oh, I think he's pretty happy. I said, he has a girlfriend on a weekend, you know? So just take it that way. And then, you know, so then they'll say, invariably, and this has happened, and I've shared this story before, where people ask you, who's taking care of your kids? Like you just left them in the house, running amok by themselves, you know, and they never ask my husband or any male counterpart who's taking care of your kids. And so this had happened to me a number of times. I was getting a little tired of it, you know, because I would answer the question. Then I was like, why am I answering this question? So I remember my husband and I were on vacation, and you know how you're at a table of 10 and you sit with people you don't know. So you just sit down, and he had gone to, I think, the restroom. So he wasn't there yet. And I was sitting there, and it was a couple. And of course, invariably, we start a conversation, and they asked me, I says, well, you know, who you're from? We're just talking. And then finally, so you have children? I said, yes, I have a son. And at that point, Troy must have been maybe 6 or 7 years old. And they said, well, who's watching him? And of course, then it clicks, you know, and the whole mischievous part of me comes alive. And I realize this is my chance. I may be able to stop this insanity. And in the process of me thinking, my husband comes, he sits down, and he looks at me, and he knows I have this mischievous look on my face, which if people know me, they know what that looks like. And I say to him and to his wife, I said, oh, I said, my husband is watching my son. And then they look, and they're looking over at this gentleman sitting next to me, and they're looking at him. And I said, oh, him? That's my boyfriend. So needless to say, no more conversation that night, but I was pretty happy.
Today in the studio, we're talking with the Honorable Laverne Council, CIO for Veterans Affairs. Coming up, we'll talk about Laverne's days at Johnson & Johnson. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking with the Honorable Laverne Council, CIO, Veterans Affairs. Laverne, prior to coming to VA, you were the very first CIO at Johnson & Johnson. Mm-hmm. Tell us what it was like, a day in a life at the CIO of a major corporation like Johnson & Johnson.
Well, I wasn't actually the first CIO, I was the first global CIO, because Johnson & Johnson was a federated organization, 250 operating companies in 57 countries. And I actually was recruited out of Dell to come and take J&J's IT global, but also transform the organization. So I'm proud to say that I was the youngest officer ever recruited from the outside to come into J&J and to take on this Herculean task. It was an interesting role to find myself in because the transformation was enormous. And the stakes were high. Because not only was this important to the organization, it was also important that the IT organization show how best to create the kinds of shared service and what a global organization could really be that could be inclusive of all the team members around the world, but also transform itself and move forward aggressively to enable the business. And as you know, J&J is a very complex business, even though we think about the baby part and our consumer products, because that's what we all know. But they have a very large pharmaceutical business and a very large medical device business. And so the diversity of that and bringing it all together and modernizing allowed us to create really two strategies and deploy two strategies, which most CIOs don't get to do. Majority of the time is such a tough job. You last maybe 18 to 36 months. I actually ended up retiring. After 5 years as an officer, you can retire. And I decided that I was going to spend time with family, and then I was going to go do my own thing finally. And needless to say, I'm right back where I started because the call came, and the veterans called, and the president's called, and Bob McDonnell called, and gosh, this is how I have to serve. And so everything that happened at J&J has been great prep for the complexity and broadness of the VA and driving change in an environment that frankly is very storied, that has a history, and that needs to create a new one. And so J&J provided great insight to that. And because it was a very mission-driven organization, it was very clear that we knew who our consumers were. We knew we touched 1 billion people a day. And that was always a motivator. You know, if you're doing something that affects 1 billion people today, a day, you know you need to do it well, you need to do it right, and you need to engage it from your value system and from your heart. So lots of great work and a good time.
To take on 250-plus organizations and get them to have a cohesive IT strategy would be daunting for anyone. So leadership had to play a key role in achieving that. Can you describe your leadership style?
I often say I've thought about this, I'm a student. I'm always a student. I'm always learning. Most people have told me that I'm also a great teacher and I should really teach. I think it may come from the fact that I think my leadership position is coach. And coaching position is one of sort of seeing the opportunity, understanding the value of team, and understanding what everyone's strengths on the team is. So my leadership position is generally, I try to take that leadership skill, the strength of a person, and really enhance that. Spend a lot less time talking about their weaknesses and beating them over the head for the weakness, but also really focus on them taking that strength to its full potential. And so, you know, they might say, well, your expectations of me are too high. And I'll say, my expectations should never be higher for you than yours of yourself, because you know what you're willing to do. You know, I don't. I'm betting on you. So, you know, that's what coaches do. And then, you know, they may not reach exactly where you want them to go, but they get closer than they ever thought they'd get. And then we celebrate. And then we high five and then we say, OK, got to get to the next one. You know, so I think that's clearly my leadership style is coach, is enhancing the strengths, is focusing on those strengths, and is making sure that they know that I got their back.
So, Laverne, we talked to most of our guests about the concept of mentorship and sponsorship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're describing your leadership style as coaching, but you could also call that mentoring in a lot mm-hmm. of different ways. So you mentioned an early mentor in your career, Al Blair. Mm-hmm. How important has mentorship been in your career?
It's been really interesting. I think it's really important. And it's been interesting for me, too, because I didn't have any one solo. You know, I have some friends that they have. This person's been my mentor for, you know, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. My mentorship and people that have engaged me and become a part of my career and my personal life have been people at points in time. And it wasn't that I didn't value their friendship to keep in touch with them. It was just that it was the right soundbite at that time. And because I'm a very in the moment kind of person, I pay attention to that, and I don't exclude folks because they haven't been there before. I sort of include them and they become the new set. And so that mentorship has taken on many different kinds of engagement. Sometimes it's a sponsorship because someone thinks I'm the right person for that role, like with Al. In other cases, it's I'm at a crossroads and I'm trying to make a decision. And I sort of have my board of directors, I call them. And each of them have a different background, even from the hairdresser, right? Because you got to have a good hairdresser, but there's some insight to be gained by that. But I have a diverse group of folks that I'll use for different points in time. And I've been pleased that people have been willing to tell me the truth. And I've been pleased that I've been able to set myself up as someone that you can trust with the truth. And I think the more that you can do that, the more you're likely to hear it. And the more you're likely to hear it, the fact is your mentors and your sponsors become many, because people will tell you because they know you respect it and they know you know the value of that truth.
Laverne, you have had a huge success implementing change in the private sector. Mm-hmm. It is difficult not to pick up a newspaper or listen to something in the news to hear about how it's believed that the government isn't as effective as it could be. You have been in your role now for, you know, since July. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between being the CIO of Johnson & Johnson and the CIO of a major organization in the government like the VA?
I get that question quite often, and as I often tell the team, I said, you know, there's a lot of difference, and I'm learning a lot. But the difference isn't all negative. I think the difference is in how we tell our story. So, you know, when I look at the VA in particular, you know, I'm part of a private industry team that's been brought in to really change the roadmap and the path for the VA. To really be able to keep the promise that we make to the veteran. And so, you know, we're committed individuals that are prepared to leverage everything that we learned in private industry to turn this around. And one of the biggest things that I see is, you know, private industry, we tell our story well. You know who the corporation is, or you know who it wants to be. And that's our biggest opportunity, frankly, for the VA. You can hear the sound bites, and they're not always the most positive ones. And the ones that are the most positive are quiet. They're whispers. You know, no one's talking about that. And in the 7 months, 8 months now that I've been there, we've been able to create great change. You know, I've met the quiet giants. I've met people that are, you know, that are just excited that you know, I'm still bright-eyed and I know it can change, and that I'm not speaking about how slow it is. I'm talking about what we can do, and we're doing it. There are great warriors. 56% of the IT organization are veterans. And I remind them, I say, you're working for yourself. You know, you're working to help keep the promise to everyone just like you, you know, and 60% of the males in my family have been veterans. And when my husband and I made this decision that I would take this on because I'm sort of apart from family right now, it was a commitment. It was our opportunity to serve. And I take it very seriously. So, yes, big difference, but the mission is mission. And the VA mission, like the corporation mission, is still there. And I think working for mission-oriented companies is enthralling. It's exciting. You know who the end customer is. In this case, it's the veteran. My objective is to change that veteran's experience. I feel good about it. I'm using every muscle, everything that I've ever learned in my 30 years in private industry in the government. There is nothing that's been laid to waste, and a ton that's been augmented. So it certainly has its challenges, but I think if we can get more people to consider it, I think we should, because it's an opportunity to really bring many best practices to the forefront, especially for our veterans.
Well, this administration continues to bring Beltway outsiders to come in to help, especially in the high-tech area. Mm-hmm. So I got to ask you, you've had such success. You know, we have other outside, you know, people outside the Beltway coming in, like the CTO, White House CTO, mm-hmm. Megan Smith, mm-hmm. If you were to give the advice to the next person coming in, what would you want them to know?
It's an interesting one. I'd want them to, one, to know what the vetting process was like, because I didn't. And that was a lot of work and involvement there. And then going through Senate conferment. But once we get past that, I think what you want them to know is to stay optimistic and not to believe the story. What I find is that because people have such long careers in government, they remember things, and they remember them in special ways, maybe the way it happened to them or maybe the way it didn't, but they remember them. And when you start asking questions about what you can do, most people will tell you what you can't do. And so you learn that you stop asking questions about what you can do. And you ask the questions about how can I do this? You know, this is what I want to achieve. How can I? I think it's really important that you understand that time frame creates a narrative that sometimes is not necessarily reality. I think the second thing is I spent a lot of time at the beginning of my tenure with the VA talking to people inside and outside the VA. I understood from my time in private industry that I would need other leaders to help me. And I also understood that I need to make them aware that I understood that I didn't know everything and that I didn't necessarily understand this system. And so I would need their help. The thing that I really believe and I think is life affirming that is true is that human beings need to be needed. And if you tell people you want help, they want to help you. And if you're honest and humble enough to say, I don't know, they respect you and they'll help you more. So as we've tried to get things done, the things that would have taken a long time have not taken a long time because those folks remembered that I took the time up front to value them, but also to say, I don't know, and I'm going to need your help. I don't know how, but I know I will. I think taking that time, sort of making it clear that you're still a student and you're coming to learn something new, that you're not the know-all, be-it-all because you're in private industry, and that you're there for a mission is not a self-centered focus, creates a very different environment around you and I think increases the momentum to success.
Today in the studio, we're talking with the Honorable Laverne Council, CIO for Veterans Affairs. Coming up, we hear what's next for Laverne, as well as her advice to her younger self. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking with the Honorable Laverne Council, CIO, Veterans Affairs.
So Laverne, you really have done it all. Private sector, public sector, for-profit companies, nonprofit work. It's very likely that this job that you have now at the VA will end at the end of the current presidential administration. So I have to ask, what's next for Laverne?
You know, it's interesting. As I normally have done, I haven't thought about it. I'm sort of in the moment. We're doing a heavy lift. You know, instead of doing the one or two projects that they tell presidential appointees to do, I've set forward a new strategy. It's a new platform for the organization. We're bringing in new leadership. We're focusing on the now, near, and future. And it is a heads down event. I know that the right things will come to me at some point and I'll say, yep, this is what we got to do. We got to start laying the plans. But right now, I'm focused on engagement with that team. I practice a level of full engagement, which is when you're meeting in a meeting with me, I'm not distracted. I'm with you. I'm listening to you. I'm focused with you. That's been a bit much for some folks, and I sort of used to it, but it makes things happen, and it's how I'm choosing to use my time. I don't know. In fact, I remember when I was having a conversation about this role with Bob McDonald, and I said, you know, public service and working in the government, I've never done that. What do you do? What do you do with that? And I remember asking him that. I said, what do you do after you've done this and then you do that? I don't know, Bob. I said, you know, I'm not retirement age yet. So what do you do? And he says, he looked me in the eye and says, anything you want, anything you want. So we'll see.
Well, maybe you could join Aileen and I here as a radio host. Have you ever thought about doing a talk show?
Never have, but it sounds like fun.
Now, Laverne, I've loved our talk today. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much. We've talked a little bit about advice to some newcomers around the Beltway, mm-hmm. about working moms. But I got to ask you, for the young listeners out there that we're hoping to reach to get inspired mm-hmm. by your journey, If you were to go back to your younger self when you were first graduating, what advice would you like to have given her?
Oh, wow. Graduating. I really go back younger self. You know, I really liked myself at 5 or 6. And you might say, what? How you like? I really liked that little girl because everything was new. She wasn't very, she was fearless. She was chubby. She was, you know, and she was happy. And she knew what it felt like to be loved and cared for. But she was also clearly focused on what she wanted to achieve, and frankly called the boss of everybody real early. And I know, you know, there were times when sometimes that would hurt. But the fact was, I did know how to do it right. And I did know how to organize people better. And it was better to play it the way I wanted to play it than to play it all over the place. Why would we have our stuff everywhere and run around like crazy people when we can have organized play and play a lot longer? So somehow that little girl grew up into an 18-year-old woman who decided to venture off and to never be a burden on anyone. And I think if I had anything to tell my latter self, I would tell my latter self to really understand that in this life, what I've come to know is that it's through the kindness of strangers that some of the most difficult things have been dealt with for me. And that sometimes, you know, as I was younger, I was so focused on standing on my own 2 feet and holding up myself, that I didn't understand the reality of life, which is, you know, it's through what strangers do many times that we have the opportunities that we have. You know, that's how I looked at my work with the March of Dimes. It didn't matter if I ever met a family that used our services or saw a kid that wasn't supposed to survive and thrive. It was the fact that I knew it was happening, and that was my calling. And so, you know, what I would tell her is, you know, just become that stranger for somebody every day. If I had done that, I probably would have been that stranger for someone twice as long as I've had a chance to do it. And in that comes a lot of fulfillment, and in that comes a lot of comfort that, you know, you're never alone. And I think that's really important because sometimes young people feel so alone, so isolated. So this is only happening to me. And guess what? It isn't only happening to you. You're not alone. There are people that care. You don't even know who they are. And so as long as you know that, you'll be fine.
Today in the studio, we've been talking with the Honorable Laverne Council, CIO for Veterans Affairs. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.